the show today. She's back and she's got another fabulous book, No Money Deals. We're chatting to the investment guru and author, Nicole Lewis. Welcome to Property Matters. Welcome along to another Monday. Officially now, we're not in summer, but I don't know where you're listening in the country, but here in Auckland, it is a beautiful summer's day, and I'm so delighted to welcome back to the studio the fabulous Nicole Lewis. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
We should give you frequent flyer points for coming in here.
Oh, well, I do like points. Good idea.
Now, I'm really excited. We're going to chat about your latest book, but before we do, we kind of need to get to know you again for anyone tuning in. But last time you came here, I was really fascinated because you'd not long come off some travel and you'd been sort of doing this big deal while flying an international flight. And I think you started the deal in one end and hopefully it finished by the end. Did that all go through before I find out anything more?
Yes, and it settled on Friday.
Oh, how fantastic.
Yes. So it actually ended up being fantastic.
That is so awesome. So look, tell our listeners a little bit about Nicole Lewis. Who are you? Take us back.
Oh, sure. Okay, gosh, well, let me, I suppose I'll let you into a couple of little secrets, mm-hmm. because I start off the book as well by telling a little bit about myself. And one of the things is when I was just young, my mother died in a car accident and I lived with my grandparents.
Okay.
And so my grandparents were very much, you know, a little bit of a generation gap and very much of the mindset of, well, don't take any risks, get a job, work in that same job till you're old and retire, buy your family home, you're allowed to do that, don't do anything else, just pay that off and then you can live life once you've retired. So very much of that sort of mindset. Yeah. And it's interesting looking back how much of an influence your parents' thinking has on the direction your life goes. You know, especially when I compare it to my kids. But anyway, I had the recessive gene and I was very impatient, although as my son says, you're not impatient, Mum, you're eager. Because I loved it. I'm very eager. So I wanted to dive in, be rich, and not have a boss. So it's sort of like, yeah, this is cool. No clue how to do that. And of course, going against the fabulous knowledge of my grandparents of get a job and stay in it. You know, they liked the bank. Very prestigious the bank was in the 1930s. But that, you know, that was their time, not mine. So I dived into property and did incredibly well because I dived in the beginning on an upcycle. Didn't know that. That was just the way it was. It went exceedingly well. However, the unlucky side was my first down cycle was huge. Like the global financial crisis where people were living in tents and the market lost trillions with a T. So that was unfortunate. And then, as I refer to in the book, I got very heavily bashed from that, lost pretty much the lot, millions down the drain, ended up renting, and with the house we rented came a horse, which was super cool, didn't know anything about horses, and I got given this horse. I explain a bit more in the book as to how, and I started picking up horse manure to make money.
Brilliant.
For free. Like, it cost nothing to do horse manure. And I used to love it because it was sort of thinking time.
Yeah.
And from there, I then decided, okay, I can either get a job, which was what my husband wanted, my dear husband. He did stick with me. He used to say to me when we got married, oh, we can live in a mansion or a tin shed. Either way, I love you. Awesome, because we had the tin shed. But he did stick with me. And at one stage, he even applied for a job for me. I didn't know anything about it. I get this call and these people, it was, you know, you watch TV and I can't remember what it was, but you know how they bring on these things you can buy, you know, get this new exercise, but wait, there's more, you know, ring this 0800 number. And it was that call centre that he'd applied for me to have this job, to answer the phone, to sell the stuff. So, he knows me not very well. And they said, oh, we'll come in for an interview. And I thought, I didn't know what they were talking about. And then he owned up that that's what he'd done. He sent me the covering letter. And I was Mr. Lewis. and I'm very consciousness.
Oh, no.
And so I was like, you mean Mrs. Lewis and conscientious?
Oh, no.
He was like, yes, that's what I meant. I was like, right. So I went for this interview, and for me, the worst nightmare. Like, you know, showed me around the office, and there's the little cubicles, and if you work super long hours and nights and weekends, you might make 60 grand. That top salesperson made 70, you know. But if you've got kids, which I did, no time off if they're sick. And I was thinking, well, my husband's applied for this job. He can do that.
Yeah.
So anyway, long story short, I cut the interview short by saying, oh, my car parking's run out. And the next day I got a phone call, you didn't get the job. And I remember I sort of went, yay. Oh, like, hang on. I didn't want the job anyway, so that's awesome. But what? I can't even get a job in a call centre? What the heck am I going to do now? And so that's where I thought, pick up horse manure, sell that for $2 a bag, way more fun than working in a call centre, and figure out what to do next.
Love it. And then the passion for investing, when did that sort of really come into fruition?
Well, when I sort of figured out, how can you buy property with no money? Because I had no cash. I also had bad credit, as I discovered when I actually got offered a job for one that I applied for in a bank. And then they gave me the job and they were sending the paperwork. And then I remember they rang and go, oh, we've just done your credit check. And I was like, yep. And I went, you've got two defaults. And I was like, oh, only two. But no, that was bad, apparently. That was bad. So they took the job offer. They rescinded the job offer, took that away. So I thought, I'm unemployable and I better get back in and do some property. So that was kind of like the thing was, I had bad credit, I had no money, and of course plenty of people reminding me that you can't do this, and not really any help. So I had to start off with no money deals, because that was my option. In fact, I used to say that, you know how you walk down the street and the doors to the bank, because when I used to walk down the street, there was a BNZ and the doors would always automatically open. But for somehow, for everyone except me, somehow or other, when I walked past, they remained firmly shut. It's like, go away.
Oh,
so,
no.
So there was no chance of ever borrowing any money either with my two defaults. So I sort of thought, okay, how can I do all this with no money and get started? And that's sort of where... That's what I did. That's exactly how I started. And I think the thing is, you've got to, first of all, have the right mindset and tune out all the noise, as I call it, because you get
And noise from people that technically you trusted too, you know, they're special people in your life, but to tune that out's not easy.
No, well, you've got two lots. I mean, first of all, what do? We always go to our loved ones, whether that's our family or our spouse or our whatever. And a lot of them are just, they're not so much negative, but they don't know.
Or they're wanting to protect you from risk, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
Because that's our natural parenting thing, is to protect our family from risk. Yeah,
that's exactly right. Or, you know, you go and you have a conversation with whoever's going to listen when you're at work getting your coffee or getting your water. And most of those people don't have an investment portfolio either. So we just listened to them. And I worked in the bank because that's what my grandmother said was awesome.
Brilliant.
Now, what's the bank all about? Risk.
Yeah.
So nobody thought that buying any property was a good idea. And so you do start to think, everybody thinks this is wrong. But I'd read these books and that's how people get rich. So I thought, got to be something to it. So you've got to really listen to the right people. So you go and find where those people are, like the people that have got the big portfolios, and the people are where, who are where you want to be, and you listen to those people. So you know, that's a sort of a tough lesson, and that's sort of, because mindset is everything. It absolutely is. So I talk about that a little bit in the book. I talk about what I call the up lens and the down lens, and that everything that happens to us in life, even really on a daily basis, we either take negatively or we take positively. And however we take that, it filters how we think about the next thing. So if that makes sense, you know, you think about a tiny little thing, like your alarm doesn't go off in the morning. Oh my gosh, you bound out of bed, and then you kick your toe on the bed as you walk past. It's like, oh, it's going to be a terrible day. Whereas whereas if the alarm goes off and you've got something exciting happening for the day and you kick your toe as you walk past, you're like, oh, that's cool, that's okay, that's the worst thing that's going to happen to me today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's that's how it all starts.
It's all in that mind. Can I ask, how old were you when you purchased your first property?
22.
22, and not meaning value, but number, like, have you kept track of how many properties you've actually purchased over the years, numbers-wise?
No, not really.
Stab in the dark?
Stab in the dark, somewhere probably close to 1,000 odd.
Wow.
But some of those would include buying and selling. I certainly don't have a thousand.
Totally understand it. Yeah, yeah, that's cool. I should say how many have you brought on, you know, a 747?
There was only one.
Why do you see property as the key to invest? You know, why not shares in companies or setting up a KiwiSaver fund, or why do you see property as the key?
Well, that's actually a very good question, and that is actually another thing I talk about in the book, is that I actually think a diverse investment strategy is a good idea, and I've certainly taught my children to invest in KiwiSaver managed funds, a little bit of a share portfolio, etc. But I think you can't necessarily become an expert in everything. And I think that there's multiple ways that you can do well in life, and starting up a business is certainly one of them. But you've got to put your energy into becoming an absolute master at one. And that one thing has to be what you're absolutely passionate about. And so for me, that's property. Everybody has a property as well. So, you know, whether you own it or whether you rent it, you know, we all live in one. Whereas shares, derivatives, commodities, you know, funds, those sorts of things are what some people do and a lot of people don't understand.
Right.
You know, now I've met people that have got great share portfolios. We'd have very robust conversations about what makes the best investment, shares or property. And it boils down to there's no right or wrong answer. It's what you're passionate about and what you're expert in, what you've spent years learning to be an expert in reading.
But you've taken that expert knowledge to the next level by inspiring others. Now, that's whether through your books, but you also do coaching and mentoring.
Correct.
Why did you head down that path?
I got asked to. So when Property Quadrants came out, people would read that and get in touch with me. And then they asked me if I would mentor them. And I thought, I suppose I can give it a go. And I remember my first client, Anna, and first mentoring client. She's a friend of mine as well, but I thought, oh, I'm going to put my mentoring hat on. And I remember sort of thinking, okay, she's got her strategy session. And I'm driving out to her place going, what is that Claire's strategy session going to be about? You know, like, what am I going to do? Then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I know. And so the mentoring sort of evolved where I have a very robust system. Everything, of course, is strategic and systemized. However, it's very fluid because each individual is very different and they have to go in a very different direction. So it's, even though it's, there's a whole strategy and system behind it, it is very much on a case-by-case basis. So that's how I got into it. I got clients that are amazing. Like where, you know, three of them are in the book with their stories. A lot of them have given me testimonials. We're great friends. We do deals together. So I look at it as we're expanding the property lifestyle family. We all help each other.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love your philosophy, and I think that's why we hook you back in here so often. It sort of fits the vibe and ethos of our show and the company behind us. You mentioned Property Quadrant, so this was your first book.
Correct.
Went out. Tell us a little bit about that in a nutshell before we move on to the new one, because it's kind of important. It has got a natural segue, if you like, to read the first one and then into the second.
Yeah. So I'm very passionate about property, obviously. Yes, that. And I tend to think everyone deserves a house. But the question is, how do we get there? So I looked at it thinking, well, property actually fits into four quadrants. So quadrant one is our family home, and that's when we make an emotional purchase. You know, the family home is something you want, a specific area, a specific type of house. You're going to bring your family up there. You know, if you think about your family home when you grew up, it grabs you by the heartstrings. It's emotional. And the good old Kiwi way is we tend to buy our first home, and then we work really hard, and we pay our mortgage down, the property. property goes up in value, and then we think, oh, let's get an investment property. And that's where it all goes a bit wrong, because we don't understand.
Mm.
It's a very different set of criteria. So what we should be doing is going into quadrant four, where we buy a passive income property, because when the world turns to custard, like it does, COVID and things like that happen, and cash gets short, what you've got to have is cash flow, money coming in, and then you're safe. And that's what quadrant four is all about, positive, passive cash flow. How do we do that? We can use quadrant three, which is what No Money Deals is all about, how to make money using property to buy property.
Right.
And then once we've finished building our passive and active income, we can go to quadrant two, which is where we buy a high-end property with a big capital gain, or a holiday home, or student accommodation for our kids off to university, or help our kids into their first home, that sort of thing, instead of using it as the mistake quadrant, where you buy your first investment and it makes you cash poor because it's sucking all the money out of your paycheck every week.
Brilliant. So explain then the No Money Deal.
Yeah.
How many properties do we have to own, or where does that sit to be able to safely make the No Money Deals?
We don't have to own anything. You can start there. It's a really good question. Most people don't know about that. You know, they have the myth that they think they have to have hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy a property. And if you're going to buy quadrant one, your family home, that's true. And actually, I was inspired here on Property Matters when we were sitting on the panel. And I remember that someone had just helped their child into their first home. And I thought, now that's cool for the percentage of people that have the bank of mum and dad.
Yeah.
But what about all those that don't? How do we help them? That was the inspiration behind this book. Because what they don't know is you can start with doing something that costs you absolutely nothing and has no risk to make a large lump sum of money. Because if you buy properties are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, you could do something really simple, like buy a property for a property flipper and pass it on to them to do the work, and they can pay you $10,000 or $20,000 as a finder's fee. Now, that's how long does it take you to save $10,000 from your wages?
Yeah.
Whereas you can do a deal like that in a couple of weeks. So, you know, you can actually use property to make substantial, and that's the small end of the scale.
Yeah.
You know, that's the minute money that you can make, and then it can go up to there. Look, sky's the limit.
So take us through the book then. Walk us through the journey. Obviously, you kick off talking a little bit about yourself, your own journey, and then I love the title, Are You a Delayed Spender?
Yeah, well, you see, I took the tack between my journey and my friend Delwyn. Delwyn and I were friends at primary school, and we used to love playing Monopoly. And it was just interesting, as I thought about how I write this book, that our lives ended up going in very different directions. And so Delwyn and I, our parents, both taught us to save. And what save means, and interestingly enough, my niece got her first job and she started saving. And I said to her, oh, where do you put your money? Oh, I just put it into a savings account. I said, and you earn interest on that? No. And I'm thinking, so she, sorry, my dear niece, but she's really a delayed spender. So what's the difference? So when we save, the money doesn't work for us, okay? It just, now you might say I'll put it in an interest-bearing account, or like me, my mum taught me to put it in a term deposit. Mm. Woohoo! You know.
Did you have bonus bonds? Were you a bonus bond person?
No, my grandparents had bonus bonds though, but I don't know. Anyway, different story. So that was sort of like, and then you earn a little bit of interest. But what I discovered when I looked at my life and I looked at Delwyn's life, 20 years down the track, was that her savings eroded. Because what it is if you are like a huge percentage of the population, you actually spend that money. And sometimes you spend it, unfortunately, your car breaks down or your washing machine breaks down or whatever, and you have to replace it. Or sometimes you just spend it on life, You want to go on a trip. You want to buy the latest iPhone. You want a car. And you go, oh, I've got that money.
That's what my savings
are
for.
That's what it's for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Correct. And so it's actually just delayed spending versus having an investing mindset where you make your money work for you. So here's an example. My son, Jacob, he's 20. Just finished university. He's got his BCom. He finished last year. And so what I taught him to do, and he was fortunate, he studied at Auckland University and he lived at home. And you get some allowance. He'll probably go, oh, Mum, I've told you 1,000 times, some allowance, $300 a week. And I said to him, take that allowance. He goes, oh, why? That adds to my student loan. I said, yes, but your student loan is interest-free. Get that allowance, plumb it into your managed funds account. Okay, so fast forward 3 years, he's finished his degree. He's got $45,000 in his managed funds account and a student debt of $35,000. So that's what I mean by investor mindset. That money has worked for him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he said, so then it's like, well, he goes, should I pay my student loan off? Now, everyone will say, yes. And I go, no, it's interest free. Why would you take money that's making you between 15 and 20% per annum to pay off something that's costing you nothing in this cycle?
Money cycle's different.
So we'll talk about that later. But, you know, managed funds, they can dip, as they did in 2022. But we're in a growth cycle at the moment. Yeah, so that's the difference. Make your money work for you.
And in your book, you talk about parking your emotions.
Yes.
Talk me through that.
Okay. So property is emotional, no matter which quadrant you are in. And actually, that chapter wasn't even going to be in the book to start with. But when I was discussing it all with my writing coach, Michelle, she said, you know what? We actually have to put that in there because it's really prevalent. And it is true. You do get emotional at the beginning and at the end of every property deal. Like when you're going to put a property on paper, you can be so emotional, like, whoa, oh my gosh, I'm going to get, okay. And the real estate agent is there to make their commissions.
Sorry, agents, love you to bits,
but, you know, let's face it.
They're going to add to your emotions because they're excited. They're getting paid.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Totally. And they want to get the best for the vendor and the best for you. So they'll sort of say, pay a bit more, put a high, and you will because you want it. And so sometimes if you're in quadrant three, which we are in no money deals, that doesn't help you. That can lead you to losing money. And so the second time you become emotional is at the end of the project when it's finished. This happens to me every time. I hand my property over to the real estate agent to do their job and I go, oh, what if it's not going to sell? Or, oh, what if it sits there too long? Or I've got money going out the door paying the mortgage every month. Every time. So for goodness sake. And so what you've got to do is park your emotions. Every property sells. You've picked a top real estate agent. Let them do their job. Park your emotions. Easier said than done.
Yeah. I was going to say, what have you taught yourself writing the book? Yeah.
And funnily enough, that's where the chapter came from.
No.
Because in discussing it with my writing coach, because I had a deal on the go, she goes, oh, wait, but you've just parked your emotions doing all this. And I was like, yeah, well, we've got to put that in the book.
Brilliant.
I said, do we? Yes, it's highly relevant to realise when your emotions are inhibiting your deal or when you're letting yourself go into the down lens because you're letting your emotions go crazy or worrying about something that's not going to happen.
Now, you mentioned earlier, you sort of touched on it, that, you know, you've got some stories in the book, some of which have come from your original Property Quadrants book. Tell us, I guess, a little bit about these stories and the people behind them and how they've inspired you to keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, you know, like I said, I ended up having people reach out to me. So I do mentoring. I don't advertise it. People just get hold of me. They book a call with me on Calendly. We talk about their situation and what they want to achieve. And some of them will want some mentoring and I'll think we're a fit. So there's three stories in there. There's Jesse, there's Angela, and there's Ryan. There's three of my mentoring clients. And I'm so sort of like, if I can say, proud of them. They've done such an incredibly good job, and I'm really excited to share their stories because they also tell the readers exactly how they did everything. So Jesse's story in there, he had $34,000, and he's like, right, how do I start with that? So in the book, his story's in there, and exactly how we got him a property that was worth $850,000 last year. It would have gone up in value now for $34,000. And then we've got Ryan's story in there as well. Now, interestingly enough, Ryan's story motivated me to do the deal I did on the plane that settled on Friday.
Brilliant.
So I finished off the book in Tahiti, and I was finishing with Ryan's story. And Ryan basically had a negative equity deal. And we go, what the heck's that? Well, not only did he not put any money in to buy this property, he got paid $75,000 to buy this property. And the properties ended up being worth $1 million more than he got paid $75,000 to buy. And pays him, I think it's about, was $60,000 a year in passive income. I think that's about $80,000 now. The interest rates have come down. But when he was trying to put the deal together, he was like, oh, why am I even offering on this? I've got no money. I don't know how I'm going to ever buy this property. But he's like, you know what? I just keep going. I just keep moving forward and give it a go. And like I've always said to my clients, follow everything through to the end. Just do it. And it's just a number. And so Ryan actually said, well, you know, that I inspired him to do that. And I was like, well, that's cool. That's really nice to know. And then he inspired me back. So it's similar.
That's cool.
I was putting the offer in on this property, and I'm thinking, ugh, how can I make those numbers work? I'm thinking, I'm going to end up short. I'm not going to end up not having enough money. And then I thought, no, I won't do it. I go back, I write the book. You know, Ryan goes, I thought, of course I am. So I did, you know, I put the offer in, and it worked. You know, the deal went ahead. I ended up finding someone else. That was a no-money deal for me. I ended up on-selling it to somebody else, and I'm helping them, and they should make about $3 million profit out of it.
Wow.
So it's been a win-win-win. Exactly.
But I love that because it gives the integrity to your books, having these real-life stories in there.
Correct.
Yeah. When you're going into author mode, when you're writing both books, like, how do you create, I guess, the format, the chapters? If it was a fiction book, we'd say the storyboard of your characters and story. How have you done that planning to get into that book? Because it took, was it over a year from start to finish?
No, it took me about 3 months.
3 months,
yeah.
Okay.
3 months to write it, and then, of course, it goes through
it editing. Publishing and all that, yeah.
Okay, I am a big believer in having a good coach. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have a brilliant writing coach, Michelle Stampy, and she's credited in the book and the acknowledgements. Without her, I couldn't have done it.
Right.
So it's her formula that taught me how to do that. So she's like, you think about what chapters you want to put in the book, and then you think about what's an opening story that you have experienced to basically get people engaged. Then you can do a bit of teaching. What is it that you want them to learn from it? And then you give them the result of what is it that was achieved from it. And then you give them a challenge so they can start to go, how can they put this into practice for themselves?
Mm.
And then I think one of the big things that she taught me was you can write the book in any order. Doesn't matter what chapter you start with. And you write the beginning last.
Mm.
So therefore, you know, you sort of don't suffer from writer's block as such.
Okay.
Yeah. And then every week I'd have to do 10,000 words and I'd send it to her. Then we'd get on a Zoom call and we'd discuss it. And then from that would come, here's another story I didn't think about. Or, oh yeah, that, you know, or she'd be like, what the heck are you trying to explain here? It's way too complicated. And I'd be like, okay, right, let's make sense of it. Or how do you do this naturally? And I go, I do this. And then that's how the no money, the park your emotions chapter came.
Brilliant. How much ended up on the cutting room floor?
Oh, a fair amount, to be fair, because you want to keep your readers invigorated and you don't want to get bored. So she'd sort of say, no, cut those those two pages into one. Too much waffle around it. Okay, done. Main points only. Yeah.
So is there another book? This book was very focused on quadrant three. Have you got another book coming for the other quadrants to expand?
I do. I've thought about ending up making it a three series, mm-hmm. and the next one is going to be, it's going to focus on quadrant four. We're going to call it Bankrupt to Billionaire. It's going to basically follow the 10X journey that I've been on. So, you know, you start thinking, how do I spend $500,000? And then how do I turn that into $5 million? How do I turn that into $50 million, $500 million? And then you realize it's just a number. So it's going to be focusing on basically the big deals. Yeah. So I need to find my billionaire. Okay. Give me some inspiration.
We need some billionaire stories. Yeah, yeah. Your book has already launched overseas and has been picked up in a number of countries.
Yes, actually they sent me a huge list of where it hit 1, 2, 3 and 4 in about 10, 15 different countries around the world. But it got number one in the US, in Australia, in Canada, and I think the other one was Italy.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I guess that for me says your information investment-wise translates internationally. You know, there isn't the same process works, obviously, different money denomination, but in each country this process works.
Yeah.
It's not a Kiwi restricted thing.
Exactly. I mean, as long as you can actually buy a house, I just came back from Rarotonga, it doesn't work there, because you can't buy a house in Rarotonga. It's all about lineage. So, okay, sorry, Rarotongans, don't work there.
Not buying here. Yeah.
And Bali is also another very difficult place to buy. But anywhere else where you can go in and you can buy a property, it works.
Is it ever too late to start? If someone's listening now going, I've been a lifelong renter, still haven't touched my Kiwi Saver because like your grandparents, that's been put aside for when I retire, but they're still at work now. Is it too late to start?
Never too late to start.
And what path would you suggest? Would they skip that family home scenario if they're doing it later in life?
Look, if I was being 100% strategic, the best place to start is quadrant three. Go do yourself a no money deal, even if you've got $1 million in the bank, because you learn without risking a single cent.
Right.
Then you go, I set them a challenge of saying, now go double the money you've got sitting there. Because if you can leave KiwiSaver and let it compound, go for it. You know, so go, if you've got some money, now go double that. You can go do a property flip. You can, there's so much. And I go into all of these things in the book. Like you can do a vendor venture. You could be an investor. You can, if you've got some money, you could put it in like, and use a money partner. Jesse's story explains that. He had a money partner and the money partner made interest on the money. So you've got, you know, both ways of actually doing it all.
When you say a money partner, another person or another business?
Another person. Okay. Another person. So Jesse had $35,000. He needed $135,000. And someone else said, oh, I've got $100,000. You have that. And then they negotiated how much interest Jesse paid. I think it's about 15%. It might have been 20%. I'm not sure. But it's a short period. Like, it's per annum over 3 months. It's a huge amount of money. It's got to be in track to both parties.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've had some people ring me going, hey, do you want to be a money partner? I'll pay you 5% per annum. I'm like, no. You know, give money away. So it's a win-win and people want to help you out again because you can do so much more, you know. So there's so much you can actually do. I always say start with what you want to achieve. Start with what you love and then work out what expertise is around you so you can de-risk.
That's a good life lesson for anything, really. Not just investing, isn't it?
True.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. What other professionals have you involved, I guess, in your deals or would you give advice to? Like, I mean, is it around then making sure you've got the good mortgage broker or the good insurance? Or, like, where does all that, the other professionals, good lawyer, I'm guessing?
No, that's a very key question.
Yeah,
you're right,
yeah.
Because I do talk about your partners in there. You have got to have an exceptionally good mortgage broker.
Right.
They're few and far between.
Yep.
You have to think outside the box, not just one that'll go to a bank. You know, you might need peer-to-peer, you might need project lending, asset lending, all sorts of things like that that can actually help you out. So really good mortgage broker that understands it. You also need a lawyer that will do what you want them to do. So I say you train your lawyer. I've got a brilliant lawyer I've used for 15 years. That because a lawyer, they're there to point out the risk.
Yeah.
That's their job. And, I mean, my lawyers a few times said to me, oh, you've got a bit of risk here. And I said, yeah, thanks. I'm aware, but I'm going to go ahead anyway.
Mm.
Whereas sometimes they can put you off.
Mm. Mm.
So you've got to, and there's like every industry that's good or bad, accountant is another absolute key, especially if you're running your quadrant three business.
Right.
You're dealing with big numbers. You don't want to make a mistake.
Yep.
So you have to have an accountant who's a specialist in property and also who has a very good reputation with the IRD.
Mm.
I've been audited. I know that, you know, so I speak from experience here. I know these things. So, you know, it's important. And the other really important thing is your team. So your tradespeople. Like, I've got fantastic tradespeople.
For flipping those properties,
For flipping properties. You know, I can ring them and they're there straight away. And an exceptionally good agent who knows how to sell.
Right.
Yeah, and there's few and far between of those as well.
But I love it that you've got all these people in your toolbox.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
It's not about going solo.
No, not at all. Not at all. You're in it. Exactly. And I mean, you know, I do a deal and I think, oh my goodness, I've got to triple check these numbers.
Mm.
Because, and then I'll ring up a friend of mine who's, you know, an expert in whatever it is I've just picked up and go, am I right? Have I missed something? You've always got to have the right people to bounce the ideas off.
And what is the state of market today that you're seeing?
Oh, I think it's really exciting.
Yep.
So I think it started to turn last year. And so we're on the very slow upward climb. At the moment, the market's still, last year I think it was a slow market rather than a low market. So this year I think it'll climb very slowly. It's my crystal ball. Very slowly all through 2025. And then I think we'll pick up momentum in 2026. Most likely it'll peak. I think, given we're going to have elections in 2026, I think it'll peak, could go one or two ways around when the elections. I think it'll peak 2027, though. I don't know where.
Okay.
I don't know where in 2027. So 25, 26, prime time to make money in property. But as I said to one of my mentoring clients who just started with me last week, right now, while we're just at the turn, it's a brilliant time because you can still pick up a property that's not at an auction. You can still pick up a property that's not a multi-offer, and you can still put a due diligence condition in. When the market gets hot, they'll all go to auction. And the one that's not at auction, you know, you'll ring, go, oh, I've just seen this listed 5 minutes ago. They'll go, yeah, we've got 10 offers on the table.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh. So you'll put in your offer and they'll go, it's got to be unconditional. And you'll be like, oh, but I haven't got any money. So it's a good time to start now.
As Kiwis, are we a nervous bunch at investing? Like, do you spot, you know, given your book's popular around the world, do you spot certain countries are better and stronger at taking those risks and going for it?
Well, that is actually a very good question. I don't necessarily know. I mean, the US definitely will go harder, but they're a much bigger population. Mm, so would I have the statistics?
True.
I think we're very property focused in New Zealand.
Okay.
I mean, yes, we are conservative. That is exactly right. And I think that what you said earlier, you know, our parents teach us to be cautious. That's not a bad thing.
But they did teach us property is the way to go.
Correct. Yes,
yeah.
Correct. And you've got to do it right. I'm very conservative. So, you know, I don't want to lose any money. Been there, done that. So I will say this is how you do it and this is what you don't do. It's just as important to teach people what not to do than it is what to do. So being conservative is fine as long as you don't let it stop you. You need to move forward or you're moving backwards.
Brilliant. There's certain guests on the show that I just feel I blink and the time has gone and we've barely scratched the surface, which is why you get to keep coming back. Nicole, absolutely fabulous chatting with you. Where can people download and get this book or buy a hard copy?
So it is released in all the bookstores now, so it will be in all your favourite bookstores. It should always be online as well. And we're also going to put it on propertyquadrants.com. We'll have both books.
Fabulous. Your son's now working in the business, so he's busy as we talk, getting it up.
Yeah, well, let's hope when you go propertyquadrants.com is there, and the link goes through, let's see.
If not, check in tomorrow, people, check in tomorrow. Nicole, stay well, stay healthy, lovely to catch up with you again. We'll look forward to talking, I'm sure, before the year is out.
Thank you for having me.
Have a great week, everyone. We will catch you next week here on Property Matters. Thanks to Barfoot and Thompson for supporting us. Catch you next Monday.